Robbie Lockie is a natural born activist. In everything that they are doing, Robbie is making sure that what is right, what is good, what is compassionate is at the forefront of their actions. In this interview, we got quite deep and quite dark around Pride Month, which is what we are all coming to the tail end of in June, about what it means to be associated to a certain sex or gender and why we do need to disrupt this binary pattern of whether we are a girl or a boy, and also how we can do that with love and compassion to enable everyone to be who they want to be rather than what we define them at birth. For me, it was hugely enlightening. As a cisgender female, some of these questions I've never really had to ask. I'm not exposed to the life of non-binary, to the life of a transgender either, but these are the same things that I'm morally responsible and obligated to do if I want to be part of this society. We also touched on their company, Plant Based News, that he's co-founded with Pouse, around how they need to dig deep every single day with some pretty brutal and graphic images and videos. I've learned a new stat recently that every second in the UK, three animals are slaughtered to put on our table to eat. Every single second. Now, Plant Based News and Robbie is dealing with that sort of data every day. So how does Robbie dig deep to keep moving forward? There's lessons in this conversation with Robbie for us to be able to see the truth as it is, to see the reality of our life, the darkness, but there's also light. And that's what Robbie gave me, hope. How else can we move forward? And also, what do we need to do to make sure that there is a future to move forward into?
Yeah. Everything's like flying, but this week I've had a bit of a wobble, just a few stumbling blocks and reality. I'm not sure if you get the same, but I've just read a few stats about things and it just destabilizes me about the things that are happening around us. But yeah, so I give myself space and a long bath to just switch off and get back on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about yourself?
No, I'm the same. It's constantly a constant battle to keep yourself positive considering everything that's going on around us all the time. It's a really, really challenging time economically, it's environmentally. Yeah, there's just so much to say and do, but yeah, we've just got to keep positive.
Yep, keep moving forward because that's all that we can do, isn't it? And I see you as definitely holding the spearhead of a lot of movements that are quite powerful. So thank you for constantly putting yourself forward as well.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, it's what's the word? I don't know what else I would do with my life. It's kind of one of those things. I just feel like it's. I've always been that way, really.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know how to be any other way.
Yeah.
Getting into questions.
One thing I really wanted to cover is around your work doing the vegan movement, but I wanted to start from a different angle, and I wanted to look at it from the angle of business ethics, spirituality and morality around that, and get your views on, why we should as consumers be looking to choose to do businesses who are actually ethically and morally doing the right thing rather than looking at other things such as finance, etc.
So I'm not sure I fully understand the question. So the question is, should consumers be being more conscious about the businesses that they work with?
Should we? Yes, we should. But also, what should we be looking for?
Mm.
For me, I'm looking at it sort of the morally and spiritual angle and the ethical angle. Mm. But I do appreciate that in itself is quite a complicated subject as well.
Yeah, I think there's lots of ways to do it. I think it's about trying to understand the motivations of the business itself. Do they have some kind of manifesto? I think when it comes to businesses, I think it's important to look at for certain credentials. There's things like B Corp, Corporation B. It's a really great way and a sign that a business is serious about how they as a company impact the planet and how they treat their staff. I'd love us to be Corporation B. It requires fair bit of admin, which unfortunately I don't have the time and resources to do currently on my own, but it's something that we do want to do. And I think that when you sign up to something like that, what it does do is it tells your customer that you are focused on building a business that is transparent and has a social good attached to it. Of course, making money is great. Change.org is a great example of that. they are a platform that is built for social good. People can go on there and create petitions. And if a petition goes viral, it can make change.org a lot of money. And you might say, oh, well, you know, they should do it for free and they shouldn't charge people for petitions. But, you know, they've got a team of trained campaigners. They've got office costs. They've got resource costs. They've got server costs. Why not earn money doing something you love that is helping the world? And I think that's what you've got to look for in businesses. People, founders, you know, directors who have a background of social good, of social enterprise. It's not all just about the commercials, which is obviously important to keep a business running. But I think that, you know, I personally would love to see more businesses that are giving back to society and building, you know, a fairer kind of society rather than it just always being about making as much money as possible and really sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, exploiting every single possible resource in the most possible way, which is really the capitalist system that we live in. But I do think that it can be done in a conscious way. And I think, you know, things like B Corp is a good way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, what I love about your platform, because Plant-Based News is one of the, I think it's the world's leading information hub for vegan and plant-based information. Whenever it is a sponsored advert, whenever you are financially being contributed towards putting out the information, you share that fact. You do let us know that, you know, we endorse what's put on here. It's gone through our value criteria, but we are being paid to promote as well. So as it gives me that extra level of knowledge to know that you're not just sharing information. This has actually got, there's a story behind it as well.
That's a big thing for us, is about credibility and transparency. If we're doing a financially incentivized piece of content, we want people to know that we've been paid to create that. But I think what's also important to remind people is that just because we've been paid to create it, it doesn't mean it's of any less value. And it isn't something that we would personally use or endorse ourselves. We do focus quite heavily on promoting companies or products that we would genuinely use ourselves or that we would recommend to friends and family, because I think otherwise it just comes across as disingenuous. So, yeah, it's important to have that transparency. It's also the law as well. Like if you, in the UK, the advertising standards, you have to clearly disclose that you are being paid to advertise something. If you don't do that, you are technically breaking the law. So a lot of people do it. They do brand deals and advertising deals, and they don't disclose the advertising kind of status of the piece of content. And it's actually not that, you know, it's quite unethical to do that.
Yeah, that's really important. That's quite a bit of important information. Like, bring it to this month for a second, because it's Pride Month. And it's very hard for me to go down the street and not see a brand that's never before talked about gender equality, never talked about the LGBTQI plus movement. Suddenly they're flying the flag outside the window. There's a piece of me that goes, great, we're talking about it. But there's another part that's like, are they jumping on this bandwagon and just sort of do it for the promo? Like, I'd love rainbow your thoughts washing. On this. Yeah, precisely. Thank you.
Yeah, so for me, like, rainbow washing is quite common, where brands just change their logo to rainbow, or they might sell some rainbow products, but they're not really doing anything to support the community. You know, they're not building, you know, relationships or equity with people within their own business who might be in the LGBTQ+I community. So I think, you know, if you've got a brand that you want to support that is involved in the Pride celebrations, I think before you go and spend your money with them, just find out, tweet them on Twitter or send them a DM on Instagram and ask them, like, are you involved in any LGBTQ+ charities? Are you supporting young LGBTQ+ people? Because, you know, there are companies in America that are flying the rainbow flag, but then you find out behind the scenes, they are putting money into the campaigns of anti-gay and anti-trans politicians. So, a lot of companies, particularly bad in the US, I think it's a lot worse there than it is here, where companies are spending money promoting their rainbow image, but actually behind the scenes, they are actively speaking out against trans rights, gay rights, etc. So just dig a little deeper before you go and buy a rainbow t-shirt to support your gay or lesbian or trans friends.
Yeah, I agree. And I personally, I'd love these months to not exist, because it means that Pride Month is every month, or Black History Month is every month. We shouldn't need these months to bring it to our forefront of our attention. But I think what you just said is,
I agree.
Are there policies on the website? Are they actually proactively championing and supporting these causes ongoingly, not just in leading up to June or whenever they think they should be doing it?
Yeah, I think it's important to ask that question because it can, as I said, it can always be sort of like a lip service. You know, it can always just be a ticking a box. And I think a lot of organizations are just doing that because they feel they need to. They just sort of jumped on this bandwagon where people have decided that this is the way we need to do this. We need to, you know, support people of color, support gay people, tick, tick, tick. But then the rest of the year, no work is being done at all. There's no genuine work being done to engage and connect with community. So I think that is a big, important thing.
Yeah, just to sort it up as well on that, because we had the pleasure of meeting last month, and something you shared really sparked an element of curiosity in me, which was we treat the world, actually, we treat it, especially gender, quite binary, like you're either A or B. Where, you know, I have researched since speaking with you that even science has caught up and proven that it's quite a bell curve. There's quite a flux. It's not we're always in one for being a woman or identifying as a man. There's quite a sort of fluidity. And again, this sort of Pride Month for the others, again, keeps us separate from realizing that's part of us to celebrate us, even though we may not identify us. I'd love to hear a bit more your philosophy on gender and bringing that into our own personal experiences as well.
Yeah, it's such a rich and complex subject. I'll probably talk for hours with you about it, but gender as a construct and sex as a biological kind of foundation are two very different things. You know, we're born and have a sex ascribed to us by the doctor based on our genitalia and how we look on the outside. And throughout history, many, many people, intersex people who really have kind of a combination of both sexual organs sometimes, they have multiple chromosomes and what the sort of majority have, you know, X and Y or X and X, people have extra chromosomes. It does alter and change the way a person's gender and sexuality and sex is expressed. And there's obviously a lot of science and exploration yet to come to understand the connection and complexity between sexuality, gender, identity as a layer, right? For me, gender is very much a layer that exists on top of us as people. And a lot of it is placed on us as children. We're kind of taught that men are this and women are that. And that's it. There's this little clear line down the middle and there's no different. There's no sort of, you know, gray area in the center. But actually the truth of the matter is human beings exist in a rainbow of possibility. You know, you've got more masculine, you've got more feminine, and a lot of people in the middle. But our society places men here and women here. Women have these jobs, dress like this, wear this kind of hair, speak like this, walk like this. Men talk like this. Men don't cry. Men don't show emotion. Men have these jobs and dress in this type of way and wear these kind of clothes. You know, men have hair and women don't on their bodies, which is completely untrue. A lot of women have hair on their bodies, but they shave it off or get rid of it because society says women don't do that. Men do that. So as a sort of construct, you know, gender has become a framework within which people operate. And it's very restrictive because, you know, there are many people who don't fit into that binary or don't feel they place themselves in that binary. And so it takes a lot of time for people to learn that way of living. Because I think as a person, you know, we come into this world and each one of us is unique. And then we're kind of like programmed to think and behave and talk and walk in a specific way. And we almost sort of have our whole lives mapped out in front of us by our parents, our grandparents. And if we're a boy, it's that way. And if we're a girl, it's that way, you know. And then there's sexuality on top of that. And if you're born a young man, people just assume you'll marry a woman. And they just assume you're going to have a wife and kids. But, you know, you don't know whether your child might be gay or not. You don't know whether your child might be transgender or not. You don't know the gender of your child until they're old enough to feel the right gender. Because I believe we choose our gender rather than it being given to us. I think that's the way it should be. That when you're born, you don't know a person's gender until they grow up and they begin to feel comfortable on either side or somewhere in the middle. You know, I'd love to see a world and a society where, you know, things like gender reveal parties are like just non-existent. You know, when a child is born, you know their sex, but you don't know their gender. Even then, you know, sex can be complicated, as I said, with intersex people, unless there's been a bit of a deeper exploration into a person's body, which can be very invasive. You know, you don't really know a lot about a person. I've read stories of people that were born identified as male, but then realized that they were actually, you know, predominantly female in their sex, but the doctors sort of ascribed that sex. And so they spent their whole life thinking they were one, but they were actually the other, and wondered why they felt so tortured inside and sort of confused and who they were and their identity. So for me, like, there's, you know, two sides to the conversation. Is who we see ourselves to be in the mirror every day And then there's the way society sees us, and society kind of inflicts its view of what it thinks we should be from the outside in, really, when it should be the other way. We should be allowed to express and be whoever we want to be, express ourselves in whether we or what we wear, right, on the outside. That's our gender expression, clothes, a beard, our hair, jewelry, you know, makeup, like, you know, gender expression, our jobs, you know, the way we use our voice, you know, but we don't live in that world. And that's what's so frustrating. That's what's why it's such a difficult world for people who are a little bit different or who fit and who don't fit in that binary.
You are perfectly in the middle of bell curve, you know, where they got it average, yeah, or got it right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I've never felt I fitted in. And, you know, it's only in recent years, thanks to the transgender revolution, you know, the gender revolution, the discussion about gender, have I been able to, you know, think about that and find the words to talk about how I feel and fit as a person. Then again, you know, people think that non-binary is a label. It's not a thing. It's a non-thing. You know, it's not male or female. It's not, it's neither. But I mean, it's complicated because people look at me and they see a beard and they see, you know, this masculine looking lad, but that's not who I am on the inside. I'm very different to that. I'm very sort of, you know, more feminine in some ways and more masculine in others, but I don't really feel I fit into either or. I mean, that's where the sort of catch-all term non-binary comes in, and it can come in many different forms. And I think people are getting to the point now where they're starting to that actually, you know, we should allow our children and the people around us just to be who we want to be. As long as we're all consenting adults, as long as you're not harming or hurting anyone else, you know, let's just let other people be. Let them be who they want to be, just how they want to dress, exist how they want to exist. Because I think we'd have a much happier world if people just left each other, you know, let other people alone, let them live their lives and be who they really want to be.
Yeah, I completely echo that. And I appreciate you were brought up in Zimbabwe, and that cultural expectation sounds like it was a lot more heavy with that expectation rather than in Britain.
Oh yeah, it's illegal to be gay in Zimbabwe. You get criminalized. You get, I think, like 12 years in prison, you know, let alone to the transgendered people are routinely murdered in Zimbabwe. So it's not a nice place to live if you're outside of the binary.
You know, it just fills my heart with sadness, thinking that us as human beings, that we there's so much fear or hatred or judgment in us as a society, that we will look at our brother or sister or next door neighbor, however they want to be labeled, and prefer to kill them than actually address what's in our what we're struggling with.
It's still a crime to be gay, lesbian, transgender or bi in 79 countries. And you know, one thing I think also I find interesting is the idea of privilege as well, because heterosexual people don't have to think about this stuff. When you go to a country like Zimbabwe or Saudi Arabia, you know, Dubai, you don't have to think twice about holding the hand of your partner. You know, I know in Saudi, you're not allowed to kiss or anything in public, so that's different. But like in some countries, you know, if they saw a gay couple holding hands or giving a sort of kiss on the cheek or something like that, you know, you could potentially have your hotel room raided in the middle of the night and be arrested. It's just, you know, we have to think about this stuff all the time and always live with that fear of someone attacking you. Or, you know, even here in London, you know, my partner, I, Lewis, you know, we don't feel comfortable holding hands in the street and near our house because it's, you know, a pretty rough area and we would, you know, I wouldn't feel safe. And living with that fear all the time is not a nice feeling. But, you know, I've learned to just accept it. But at the same time, you know, do what I can to speak out about this stuff, because there's still a lot of very ignorant people out there who know very little about what gay, lesbian, transgender, bi people have to experience on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Is that privilege that people born, like I'm cisgender, white woman from a privileged background, fair enough, have certain sexism issues in my life, but there's a lot that I didn't see and still don't see this to this day, because I've never had that imposed upon me or experienced. And it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility to step up and educate myself and become an ally, because it has to stop.
100%. Allyship is the biggest thing to deal with prejudice and hate. The only way that we're going to make the world a kinder place is when good people stand up and speak out. You know, bad things happen when good people do nothing.
Yeah. Passivity is no longer an activity. You know, to be to be an activist or an ally, we have to take effective action. And that's on all of us to stand up. Yeah.
Definitely. And it takes courage and tenacity to do that kind of thing, because no one wants to raise their head above the pulpit to stand up and speak out against things that are kind of the norm. You know, prejudice and homophobia has been the norm for centuries. And now people, you know, I think we need to stand together to kind of help people realize that it shouldn't be tolerated. Prejudice of any sort shouldn't be tolerated anywhere, ever. So.
Yeah. I'm doing my best to elevate my language and the language used around my friends, such as the throwaway comment that, oh, we didn't mean it, or the comment that's derogatory to in groups or classes of individuals. And even though I'm then the one sort of looked at strange because it was just a joke, Kate, get over it, I have to say it cannot happen in my sphere, and I'm going to be the one that makes it awkward for the others who do think that that is quite funny and acceptable. Because that's where it starts, unfortunately, is in the language.
It does. And that's the thing, like having awkward conversations about race, about sexuality, about gender, it's not going to kill anyone. What kills people is prejudice and homophobia and transphobia. People are dying every day from these things because of ignorance, because of a pervading attitude that it's just a joke. You know, and what people do is they perpetuate stereotypes. Take something like homosexuality and pedophilia. Those two things have been kind of put together in the same sentence many times by the media in thousands and thousands of media publications across the world for decades, because certain facets of society have decided that, you know, gay people are a threat or predatory. And so the two things are used together routinely, to the point where in places like Russia, some 70% of people in Russia think that homosexuality is a mental illness akin to pedophilia.
And that's the power of words. They've created a world where that lifestyle is, they perceive as right, and it's not.
And gay people are hunted in the streets like animals, like dogs, and hunted. The gangs of men that go around with guns and weapons and kidnap gay men and women and torture them in various camps and things. Chechnya in Russia, there's huge camps where gay people are routinely kept captive and tortured within an inch of their lives many times, and forced to sort of, you know, relinquish their lifestyles.
Yeah, this is a deep and dark conversation. I think more people need to hear the truth, because it is sometimes a bit glossed over, and pride is all about it celebration is. And floats and you know, the rainbow. Yet there is a sinister side to it, and this is it. So thank you so much for bringing it to light with us, because we do need to hear these facts. We do need to hear the real experiences, so that we get
my pleasure.
Motivated to do something a bit more than what we're doing.
Absolutely. And of course, yes, it is dark and it's depressing hearing these things. But at the same time, you know, we are living in a world where there are more and more people who are fighting for change than they've ever been before. So despite all the darkness, I'm still hopeful that our species has a positive future ahead of it, if we can avoid the climate crisis, which is also another drama that we could go into for hours. But
well, let's pivot slightly to plant-based news, and I'm really, I really admire you with, which is you keep going in the face of all of this, because you do share some pretty graphic things and monstrosities that are happening in the world. Yet every single day, you and your co-founder turn up to share this news with us. What drives you internally, and how do you keep going?
It's a good question. I'm often asked, like, how do you and Klaus keep going, considering all the challenges and difficulties and financial constraints and, you know, the horrors that we have to look at every day? I guess it's just hope that we're going to see change, and that, you know, enough people wake up to what's going on, that we will see widespread change. It's hard to remain hopeful. But as I said earlier, like, you know, I feel like this type of work is what I'm made to do. I'm made for advocacy. I'm made for activism. I've always been very passionate about the future of the sort of us as a species. I want to see humans leave the earth and travel the stars. But that's never going to happen if we implode. So, you know, I'm just an internal optimist, right? And I believe, you know, despite being a realist in many ways, I do believe that we're going to see widespread environmental collapse. However, humans have been around for 200,000 plus years. We've survived many, many things. And I think, you know, we might not have as many people alive today in the future, as in like our species, our population could quite likely shrink considerably. But I think that we're going to still be here. I just, I get up every day and I look at the news, but I also remember that there's a lot of good out there. There's a lot of good things going. A lot of people like us working every day to educate and advocate for a cleaner, greener kind of lifestyle. So whilst all those people are still around me, all still going and pushing me and I'm pushing them, we're still here.
Yeah, I agree. For me personally, I don't think I'm as strong as you yet in the advocacy because, the data still shocks me to the point of paralysis some days. But I am learning that those days of paralysis and fear are shortening. It's not that they go away. It just means that instead of a week off, I need a day just to process or a few hours and then I'm back into action. But yeah, it is hugely admirable. So I just want to say, Robbie, thank you so much for the millions of people that I know you impact every single week with sharing the truth.
My pleasure. It's a labor of love. We do it because it really matters. It's probably the most important work I've ever done. Yeah, it's frustrating. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be honest. It's very frustrating sometimes because, you know, we know what needs to get done. I see all the solutions. It's just trying to bring more people in alignment with what's possible. I mean, just yesterday, I got a copy of this book called The Great Plant-Based Con, which is written by a journalist from, I think, The Telegraph. And it's just, you know, a diatribe about why the plant-based diet isn't going to save humanity, just filled with so much inaccuracy. It makes me frustrated. But at the same time, it also spurs me on, because the more people that try and push us down, it just makes me realize we've got a lot of work to do and we need to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Just keep moving forwards. Keep the light shining. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'd love to ask, I wouldn't say it's quick fire questions in any way, shape or form, because I would love to expand on any of the points as well. But I've got five questions I usually ask everyone to delve a little bit more into your own mindset and psychology. And the first one is, what is one skill we think we all need today?
Effective communication is what we need to learn. If we want to build better relationships with our friends, family, the people we work with, our customers, our readers, our users, it's about learning to communicate effectively with people, learning how to push people's buttons in the right way. It's very easy to create conflict. It's very easy to drive division and divisiveness. But I think that if we can learn to be effective communicators as people, learn how to read people and read the room, as they say, I feel like, you know, we'll all be happier people in the long run.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. And what do you follow more personally? Is it logic or intuition?
I follow intuition. Logic tries to force its way in. But logic and intuition, yeah, they are two sides of the same coin, aren't they? Sometimes it's sort of way of trying to interpret and understand the world. Intuition is something that I feel is a bit of a superpower, whereas logic feels like a tool to me. Intuition is something that we all have, but we often deny it, whereas logic is a way to dissect something and understand something from the outside in. But I definitely lean a lot more into intuition, I would say. I need to learn to trust my intuition a lot more, which I do not do. It's got me into trouble many times.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I think logic to me is the how. Once I have the vision, once I have the emotional drive, then I can let the logic process it and make sure that the steps are in place. But it has to come from my heart, which is my intuition.
Absolutely.
And how do you deal with failure or not achieving your goals?
It honestly doesn't bother me. I sort of just get up and keep going. I'm a pragmatist. I've always learned to sort of love what is. Like, if it's raining, don't get upset about it. You know, it's raining. Like, you have no control over the weather. Just, you know, it is what it is. In Zimbabwe, where I grew up, we have an expression, a very simple one, and it's, we'll make a plan. No matter what happens, no matter how difficult things get, no matter how challenging things get, we'll make a plan. You know, I'm a child of a civil war. When my mum was pregnant with me, we were driving in an armored vehicle to a hospital while people were shooting at us. You know, my parents experienced a lot of violence. My dad was in the sort of liberation struggle, the civil war in Zimbabwe. My mum has experienced so much illness and been in a lot of hospitals, and you have to deal with a lot in our lives and a lot as a child. So my parents always taught me and kind of, yeah, a lot of resilience, really. And that's kind of really my philosophy, is that life can be very hard. You never know what it's going to come when something's going to turn a corner, come around a corner and you know, give you a quick, sharp smack across the face. It's important to remember that, you know, we are infinite beings, and we have a lot of resilience in us and confidence and courage within us to keep moving forward with life. But it does require a certain fortitude, and that does require work. It doesn't just come overnight. We have to remember how much we are capable of and that we're a lot stronger than we think we are.
Yeah, that's very true. I think we underplay, and society in total has taught us that we are soft individuals and we need protection. Yeah. I think we can cope with a hell of a lot more, especially the truth. Please stop hiding the truth, guys. Yeah. We need it.
Yes, 100%.
And what is one step we can take towards moving towards a more ethical life?
One step towards a more ethical life. Obviously, it's by start by what's on your plate. I don't know how many people listening are vegan or plant-based themselves, but you know, what we eat 3 times a day, 7 days a week, has a huge impact on our planet. 73% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions when you switch to a plant-based diet. You can halve your water footprint by switching to a plant-based diet. There's so many ways in which you can make the planet better by changing what you eat. Travel is obviously a big part as well. You know, I think that we need to be more conscious about how many times we're flying every year. Are we involved in tree planting projects? You know, are we working in community gardens, you know, on weekends or when we have free time? And also just one of the most important really is just stop buying so much stuff. You know, we're all guilty of it. I certainly am. I'm always like buying a charger here and a gadget there. And, you know, unfortunately, one of my vices, which is, you know, I do like to be able to have the things I need to do the work I do, which I guess is essential. So I'm not exactly buying like Rolex watches and things like that. I think it's important to remember that we live in this capitalist world, which is essentially eating the earth alive. We are consuming the earth and just sucking every resource possible to make and produce as much stuff as possible. And yeah, we're no longer living on planet Earth. It's like planet plastic or planet dumping ground. You know, we are a very, very wasteful generation. There's just so much stuff that is being produced, the single use products and cups and knives and forks and all these different things, just millions and millions of these things being made every second and then being discarded every second. So a ethical life is a life that is more conscious, not in just what you eat, but everything that you do.
Yeah, very much so. One question I keep asking myself is, how else could I do this? And that's really helped me make some pivotal decisions. As you know, I've made my bike out of bamboo, for example. That was my, how else can I do this? Because I didn't want to take the assumption of buying a brand new bike. So just simple things like that can lead us to innovative ways of making sure our footprint is reduced. What's the one thing you'd like to leave us all with?
One thing I'd like to leave you with, as I said before, don't be so hard on yourself. Don't put so much pressure on yourself, whether that's your work, your family, your diet, your fitness. We're just living in this world where there's just so much pressure to be something or be someone. But I think, you know, I've thought about it a lot actually since we did our amazing retreat we did with Richard Newman. It's just, you know, stillness and quiet is really something we should cherish more in our lives and also, you know, integrate more into our lives, slowing down, not being so kind of busy all the time. Like, busy is not a badge of honor. You know, a number of people in the UK, there's this attitude where you ask people, how are you? I'm busy. I'm so busy. What does that actually mean? You know, what are you doing with your life? What is driving your sense of purpose? You know, are you happy? You know, to me, that's something that we should be thinking about more than anything else. It's easy to say, like a lot of people are stuck in jobs that they hate, but they're in the jobs because they have to be in those jobs. But at the same time, you know, practicing that sense of gratitude to, you know, to be alive, to be healthy, to be, you know, have food on the table, even if it's a little, life can be very, very difficult. But if we try and release a little bit of the pressure we apply to ourselves every single day, we could be that 10% happier.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. To everyone listening, please go to plantbasednews.org. I know you're very active on Instagram under Robbie_Lockie, Lockie. And obviously the links will be in the show notes as well.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for having me on, Kate. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. It's very, very deep, very insightful. What I'm left with now is a hunger to look into what else I can be doing. So yeah, thank you. You've really spurred me on.
My pleasure. Anytime.
As I said during the interview with Robbie, sometimes the harsh truth I find challenging, I find overwhelming, and I want to turn away from it. Yet now is the time to do what Robbie does so well, which is lean into the truth. We can't make changes if we are ignorant to what's happening around us. And it is impossible to ignore that we need to change the status quo. So today is the day to ask that question, how else can we be doing things? And to take that effective action and use Robbie even as a role model. Please take some time to look into the show notes and follow, like, subscribe to Robbie's Instagram as well as other social following. What he shares is truly real and disruptive and much needed for all of us to hear every single day. And next episode, I'll be interviewing a lady called Cass Thomas. Building on what Robbie said, which is effective communication is one of the key skills that we all need today. She is a communication expert, and we delve into how we can upgrade how we speak to each other, and more importantly, maybe how we can listen to each other as well, to make sure we're working towards the same goal and with compassion present. And one final message from me, please like and subscribe to the Strong Voice podcast. It means the world to me to know that what I'm sharing and the people I'm bringing to you, their voices are having a positive impact. So any feedback, positive or otherwise, drop me a message, kate@katestrong.global. And of course, subscribe so you can hear the next fortnight's podcast as well. And until the next podcast, keep in effective action.